Euro versus dollars, or choosing a European versus a US investor. This is what I like to discuss at today's show of Artist On Air with Carol Callens, founder and CEO of Series A company Lusmo, and Wolfgang Krause, managing partner at the venture capital fund High Enough.
They tend to do much more investments in these funds than European funds would do. Typically, they do 20 to 30 investments at least. And every investment they do, they see them as sort of a bet. Bet in terms of every of these investments should be a fund returner. And they really like great entrepreneurs, they really like great stories, but they always have in mind that it should be a 500 or 1 billion exit, which also makes them much less sensitive to valuation.
Today we are taking a look on a very important and interesting decision, European versus US investors on your cap table, and I'm happy to have Carol in the show, who made a very successful Series A in 2023 and decided for a European investor as a lead. High Enough from Wolfgang, who is also here today, and decided against a US investor, although he had a couple of term sheets on the table with higher valuations and more money. I wanted to understand why he made these decisions and what drove him to do this. What are the advantages and disadvantages of a European versus a US investor? When it makes sense maybe to take a US investor on your cap table, and many, many more interesting insights. So enjoy the next 45 minutes, have fun, learn a lot, and yeah, I would say, let's go.
Artist on Air, der SaaS-Podcast für den deutschsprachigen Raum. Wertvolle Tipps von erfolgreichen Gründern, Top-Investoren und führenden Industriepartnern, die euch bei der Skalierung eures Unternehmens schnell und unkompliziert weiterhelfen. Zusammengestellt von Janis Bandorski, Julius Göllner und Matthias Ernst.
Good morning and welcome back everyone to another episode of Artist on Air. And today I'm quite happy to have Carol and Wolfgang at the show. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are today talking about the right investor and if it's a European one or a US one. But before we do this, of course, you like to know who is here today. So, Carol, who are you and what are you doing?
So, my name is Carl. I'm a founder and CEO at Lusmo. Lusmo is a SaaS business and we provide embedded client-facing analytics. What does that mean? Well, we provide a building block to any software company that wants to give insights, dashboards, charts to their end customers. So it's a bit like you have in payments, where Stripe is offering you a way to do payments. You wouldn't build payments because it's a commodity. Well, same thing with dashboards. We believe that dashboards are a commodity. You shouldn't build them yourself, but your customers are expecting them to be in your software. They expect insights from you. And so we provide a very decent and good building block for you to enable that, to have a speedy go-to-market and offer your customers the value that that they deserve.
Sounds like a relevant product for almost everyone, Carol. So who is your ICP for the business?
So the typical business that we work with are software companies, typically anywhere in between 1 to 100 million in recurring revenue. Although that we more and more see that that the bigger players are also interested into using us. We have a couple of Fortune 500 companies using us and even governmental agencies where you would say, yeah, but what do they do to their customers? Well, their customers are citizens, and so they provide information on the economy, information even on what are the most common boy and girl names that people choose to end citizens. So I would say it's every software company that wants to provide insights in a visual, in a chart way to end customers that falls into our ICP, which, well, the further we go In this world, well, the further you see that almost any company is turning into a software company. So it's really a very broad ICP that we have.
So very big market, very wide ICP, a lot of revenue to gain. The question now, Wolfgang, is of course, where do you know Carol from? And what's your role, of course?
Well, I'm basically managing partner of a German-French venture capital fund. We focus on B2B investments only. We mainly invest in Series A, and we mainly invest into software businesses, SaaS businesses. And we do have a very long relationship with Carol because we know them since their very seed phase. We did a little test ticket when they just started, and then we observed their development. And then over the time, we decided to lead their Series A, which just happened last year.
It happened in Q1 last year, if I'm informed right, Carlos. So, and Series A was the last round you did, which gives, I think, every listener a little bit a feeling about the stage you're in. But maybe you take us to the journey. Before Wolfgang did the Series A, like, where have you been with the company? What was the stage before a Series A? Why were you aiming for more capital? Please take us on your journey, which bring you to the decision to make a bigger funding round.
Happy to do so. So we've almost been around for 8 years, although you could subscribe almost 2 years because we had to build our software. We didn't commercialize it yet from the beginning, so it was around mid-2017 that we had our embedded analytics offering out there, which I would say is really the where we saw the boost of the company, the growth of the company. Ideation phase 2015, mid-2017, really the boost of the company, which meant that at that time we were getting more and more traction, more and more customers in there, and even companies looking to buy a solution like us, where we were clearly, we wanted to enable any software company to do it. So we wouldn't pick an acquirer because we saw the market so big. But at the same time, you felt the pressure. And even though the company was growing pretty well, we knew that we could go harder. I think October 2017, we did our first pre-seed round. At that time was with Smartfin. Smartfin is a Belgo-British fund. So our board member is living in London with quite some standing. And we actually were the smallest ticket they ever did, which helped us, of course. It brought us some traction. And from that, we started growing. We could double the team. We could provide the value that our customers want, even with some extra services to get them onboarded quicker than we were able to do before. So 2017 kept on growing. 2019, we actually decided, because of the fact that we always wanted to be a global company, so Belgium is just way too small for a solution that we were building out. It wouldn't be any sustainable business. And so from the get-go, we went global. That also meant that in 2019, we created our US subsidiary. At that time, it was Delaware C Corp. We're doing business as in New York. We had one person up there, and we could test and try the market. And so we grew actually to our revenue share in the US up to the point where in 2020 we then decided to do our seed round, beginning of last year, so January 2023, doing our A round in a market that was very hard. I know nobody was doing any fundraising, so we were very proud being able to do that. But I think it says something about the company as well, in the sense that we're doing well, we're growing great, even for, let's say, first-time founders like we are.
Congratulations to the success indeed, Carl. Yeah, like raising a Series A at this point of time, quite difficult. I would nevertheless ask Wolfgang, like, for the Series A. It's a company, like, on paper, founded in 2015, so 8 years old already. So growth rates, probably, if you take it to a CAGR of 8 years, are very different to a classical case. Why, nevertheless, Wolfgang, did you invest in a Series A, especially at this time of the market? Maybe you can give us a little bit background also about your hypothesis or how you work different as a VC than maybe others do. It's an interesting decision from my point of view.
Well, you know, obviously the company was founded relatively early, but when you really look, you know, when they got market traction and when they really kind of offered the SaaS type solution, it was only like 3 years. So I think it's still a very, very impressive journey they did, you know, with a small seed ticket, you know, pre-seed ticket. And then, you know, when we first got to know each other, you know, we invested a relatively small ticket, you know, in their seed round together with a partner, which basically is a little bit of our model, that together with partners, we make a few bets and then, you know, we observe them, how they are evolving. And then obviously we try to invest much more money in a Series A. So I think two things. Well, first of all, I truly believe that the value proposition of Lusmo is something which serves a big market and got big traction. The interesting thing is, you know, while before we were invested, Lusmo already you know, was in our portfolio as a supplier, because two of our portfolio companies were using Lusmo, so we also had a great reference you know, on that technology. So that was one point. And then, you know, obviously they did have very, very good metrics, and we just believe that the position is very well. And having said that as well, it's very, very rare that a company at that stage has already such an international visibility. They've got a 35%, of their revenue is already coming from the US. They do have quite some visibility in the US market, which also proved true in that Series A, because they had a couple of term sheets from US investors on the table. And that's obviously what we are going to talk about right now.
Absolutely. It's a super interesting point. 35% revenue share in the US, a presence in the US before Series A, Carl, which is rare. So from my perspective, many founders are aiming for a US investor for a Series A round, yeah, like helping them to usually do the market entry afterwards. You decided against it, and we will, of course, discuss why. But how do you see it, Carol? Do you think there is a kind of a playbook in Europe that for a Series A, many founders try to get an US investor on board?
Yeah, and in some cases, for good reason. There's a lot of things to win. Going with the US fund as well, it brings you brand recognition, especially if it's the good players in there. It gives you easy access to further growth rounds. So it might even give you easier access to very good people out there to grow your team in terms of expertise, in terms of experience. We've always looked at fundraising as money that you know that you will spend in your growth, and for us it was important to test out the waters before you do the actual investments. Hence also having created the business in 2019 in the US before doing the fundraising. So in some ways we did things a little bit more different, because with the money that we had, we really wanted to prove that we could go always to the next stage. We did that with our pre-seed round. We did that with our seed round. We want to do that with our A round as well. And so it's upfront testing out the waters a bit to increase your chances and increase your trust that you will be able to get there, because it's something that we put in easily 10 to 15 hours a day for years in there. As a first-time founder, you want it to succeed. Money helps it to succeed, but we don't gamble with it either.
One follow-up question on this maybe, Carol, because it's quite interesting. Usually if we talk to founders or especially to European funds. Yeah, they say, okay, if you want to go to the US, you need like team on the ground, founder there, at least $1 million for an experiment for the market entry. I guess you didn't have so much capital after the seed. Yeah. So how did you set this up to make it to prove the market on a maybe smaller scale? Because I think it's also like a bold move, and it seems you managed very successfully.
We looked at it the way that we did it, but also COVID happened, because of COVID happened, you were forced to hire remotely. We didn't see any of the US people we hired for at least a year and a half, for example, we actually were forced to make it work the way it worked. Without any founder there, with boots on the ground. So we actually had two people from Belgium that moved over there. Our VP of marketing back in the days, she's still with us, but also a first sales person, and it helped into bringing in the culture. So that was one thing. Yes, we hired remotely and were a hybrid remote company, which made it work with the funds you have at the time and really grow the company there. I think it's always important to test out the market before going all in there. We wanted to have a number of US customers saying, hey, you're doing a great job, before we actually even had people with boots on the ground there. So before those two people moved, we actually already had five companies that were using us. And then we said, okay, now it makes sense to have somebody in there. And we grew step by step into doing that, which helped us, of course, in that trajectory in testing out the waters before doing an A round.
Very interesting to hear. And I mean, you mentioned a lot of advantages, potential advantages, Carol, for a US investor. I know Wolfgang is in the business for many, many years, and he probably has a very clear and sharp view on how maybe the US fund investment model differs from the European one, Wolfgang. So maybe you can give us a little bit insights or how you think usually US funds work, because I think there's also a downside or a couple of downsides versus the upsides, potential upsides Carol mentioned.
Yeah, and by the way, and something also has happened over the last few years, like a few years ago, if you were looking for a US investor or, you know, an Anglo-Saxon type investor, I also would say that some of the London-based funds would fall into this category. You basically, they would actively promote, you know, your way to the US and, yeah, and your strategic. But now also what happened over the last few years is that a lot of these US funds are now seeking really European plays at first, and they have set up huge funds for European ecosystem only. Not necessarily, you know, with the promise that you could instantly, you know, to the US, you know, it's basically just part, they see themselves as a typical Series A or seed or B investor. But having said that, and really being in the market now for more than 20 years, and by the way, also having done my own startup, which we sold to Nokia Siemens in the 2000s, I think there's a fundamental difference between most of the US funds and how European funds work. And what are these differences? First of all, these funds tend to be much bigger. Typically, it's a 200, 300, 400, 500 million dollar euro fund. And what that means, first of all, they tend to do much more investments in these funds than European funds would do. Typically, they do 20 to 30 investments at least. And every investment they do, they see them as sort of a bet. Bet in terms of every of these investments should be a fund returner. And they really, really like great entrepreneurs. They really like great stories, but they always have in mind that it should be a 500 or 1 billion exit, which also makes them much less sensitive to valuation. You know, what we observe, they are really willing, you know, to pay much higher valuations, you know, at a certain stage. because they think, well, if that bet works out, we are going to have a fund return, and we have a couple of fund returners in our fund that makes it worse.
One question, Wolfgang, here maybe in between. If you talk about a fund returner, you would say, because there's probably no market definition, a company who reaches a value of like half to over half a billion in euros or US dollar, if I understood you right.
Well, to be really true, if you manage a 300 or 400 million fund, you know, your 15 or 20% stake needs to return 300 million. That's how they think. And that's really how they think. So, okay. You know, obviously, it really doesn't stop at half a billion. It stops for them at 5 or 6 billion, because that's how they work and how they're used to operate in the US, especially the big brands. And also, you know, in order to make it worse, they tend to give bigger tickets, like 10 to 20 million tickets and rare.
Yeah.
So that's really how they work. So, and what happened, and I've seen this with a couple of my investments and also, you know, observing it, you know, in the market. And typically what happens is they give you 1 to 2 years, you know, after investment to prove that you are, you know, delivered to their expectations. And that's typically, so basically, you know, the time the money is meant to last, that's what the time span they really give you to prove that they made the right bet in you. Mm-hmm. But what happened, and I've seen that also, the very moment, you know, after 1, 2, or 3 years, you know, especially when it's about the next funding round or when you haven't delivered the metrics, they relatively soon lose interest. You know, it's not at all that they wouldn't support you anymore, you know, in a, you know, they aren't walking away, you know, but probably what happens is, you know, the channel partner who probably has worked together with you isn't appearing that often anymore in a board meeting. It's probably the junior guy popping up. You know, there are a lot of things, you know, you see that probably, you know, that's not their most important investment they have in the fund, because, you know, obviously when they have done 20 or 30 investments, maybe two other ones have really be proven their bet, and they really focus on that. And that's what I've discovered, you know, working with some of these funds.
So you would also say that because the number of investments per fund in Europe is lower, the time per investment, even if it's not a skyrocket fund returner in the first 2 years, is higher, and European VCs would tend to invest more time, capacity, and resources even to bring the mid-tail of their portfolio to a higher performance.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most of my colleagues here in Europe, we really fight for our companies. You know, obviously, if there's nothing to be saved, you can't save it. But as long as you have a reasonable product, if you have some sort of a market fit, at least if you have a pass, you know, making growth, probably reaching the 10, 15 million in ARR, you're really going to fight very hard for your company. And because that's our business model, we simply can't afford, you know, losing a lot of companies. We really have to make sure that, you know, most of our companies, you know, bring some sort of a return. And that's, by the way, also, especially at high enough of our promise that we are really trying to support them, you know, for a very long time, at least, you know, the time, you know, of the fund period. What I may add as well, and that's also comes to the next stake, you know, that's kind of a general approach, but also what we have observed, you know, when you are working with kind of Anglo-Saxon type funds, you have to be very careful who is really talking to you. Is it really the channel partner, or is it somebody else? What we have observed, like especially in up markets like 2021, you know, these funds, they raise huge amounts of money, like 300 to 400, 500 million, and then they staff up. And typically what happens is, you know, they recruit principals, you know, or junior partners who are very brilliant and very smart people, but who are in their 30s. And you just, you know, use the big brand, you know, they are working for to build up their own track record and really, you know, making these kind of bets in a very systematic manner. You know, sometimes, and that also happens, that, you know, these are really not the channel partners, so basically the guys who own the fund, but they are basically employees. So, you know, when things don't go that well, or especially when you have a town market, you know, it tends that there's kind of some movement on their staff. So, you know, that's also an observation we've done over the last 20 years.
Venture capital, as you heard, can come with some challenges, but there are some alternatives. All internet and software entrepreneurs should listen up now. Are you at a crucial point with your internet or software company? Are you considering selling a part of your business, or do you want to take your company to the next level? Today, I want to introduce you to Flex Capital, a fund that completely rethinks the concept of private equity. Flex Capital steps in exactly where traditional capital providers reach their limits. Why? Because Flex Capital is not just an investor, they are trailblazers. All partners and the majority of investors behind the fund are software entrepreneurs who understand your business and can provide crucial support for the next steps in growth. With Flex Capital, you receive not just financial support, but a whole set of operational tools and a team of experts specialized in professionalizing companies while simultaneously increasing their efficiency, profitability, and market value. With Flex Capital by your side, you can significantly reduce your private financial risk as an entrepreneur, scale your company from EBITDA of 1 million euros to 10 million euros and beyond, lay the foundation for your next big exit, supported by a team that has already walked this path many times. Ready for the next step? Visit us at flex.capital and discover how Flex Capital can help take your company to the next level together with you.
So people leave the company because the fund is maybe not performing well, and then the person who was in charge of the deal is not in the company anymore. And so the connection of the venture to the fund is also like just like broken down. And the general partner, as you mentioned, does not have a lot of interest in going in because it's not a potential fund returner anymore. And so they do what's necessary, but not more.
Exactly. And we've seen that pattern quite often, especially now, by the way, now since a couple of years, you know, after the heydays of 21 and maybe beginning of 22, there has been, you know, especially, you know, in London, huge changes in staff, you know, in these huge funds. So I'm not saying that it's good or bad. It's just basically that these are things as a startup you should observe and kind of just, you know, keep in your background when you're dealing, with these kind of investments.
So I would like to understand, Carol, a little bit more your decision process then for this, you say, because you said, okay, there are a couple of advantages, of course, your aspirants bring into account. Probably Wolfgang was invested at the seat already, so you also got a couple of information from the other side. So please take us to the journey. How did you like come to a decision? Or maybe you tell us first, like, how did the process went so far? Because Wolfgang mentioned you had a couple of term sheets also on the side. And then, okay, why did you decide against the US investor? But first things first, how did the process go?
And by the way, sorry for interrupting you. You know, we really played very fair. We never would lead a Series A if a third party wouldn't do a prize.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because being a seed investor, so that it was really played very fair. So we looked at these term sheets and then obviously we aligned to them.
No question here. So this is quite clear, but good you mentioned it. So Carol, tell us about the process. Like how did it go? It sounded like very well.
Yeah, I think in business you always have to play it smarter, and there's a number of factors that come into play, and we always try to have control or be able to control as many factors as possible. So mm-hmm. If you look at how we did our fundraising track record from beginning to the end, you will always see that the VCs that entered in there, and so also High Enough, but also Smartfin or Axileo, they always had portfolio companies using us. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Why? Because one, that doesn't make us have to pitch what we do to VCs. They will trust their own portfolio companies. But at the same time, they're our customers. We work very closely with them. And so we also know how that works with their VCs. We have close contact. So you already control a bit of the environment on how do they work, how does it play out. And actually, given the fact that a large number of our customers are SaaS companies, we've seen the good, the bad, and sometimes also the ugly. And that leads into understanding the play pretty well. And so, for example, when we were building up for our A round, there's a number of portfolio companies of high enough that are using us as well. And so they were able to tell to Wolfgang in what we improved, what are some things that we still should improve, what are some things that they would look at the market. So that's one thing. Trust, because I think trust is really important. Our take on that was if we know portfolio companies, we know them early on, because Wolfgang was, like you said, he was early on to the process as well. That builds up, and that's important in moving further. Then it's about, okay, growth. Okay, we had very good growth. Mm-hmm. How can we continue that? Because you want to continue and maybe even accelerate on that part. And so there's a number of plays that we made for ourselves that we would do once we had gotten the money. And from that, we created the amount of money that we would need for these plays. And mm-hmm. we went on the market with that. We got some offers there, a lot of the US offers, and that was already an important one, were higher than what we were aiming for.
In terms of volume of the money, Carl?
In terms of volume of the money, in terms of what we would raise, which you could say, yeah, isn't that a good idea? Or isn't that just good? Well, the higher the money, the higher the expectations, of course. And if you don't have a play for that high amount of money, it might be dangerous, because there is something like trying to grow too fast. You can be too fast to the market. It can be that your play that you're doing with your company is a good play, but that right now maybe it's a year too early or 2 years too early. And if you start pushing on things that you believe or that are very unlikely, but just in terms of the amount of money, then that's not a good idea. Add to that that we're all first-time founders putting in all the hours in there, held family for years and years. We did want to have control over the environment, especially in an economy that was in a downturn and that was not the easiest one, but we were raising with quite some confidence in growing. We actually had a number of offers there where we looked at comparing them. Trust is one thing, amount of money and what to do with it is another thing. And then, of course, your current cap table. Can you make it work in terms of valuation there? And then maybe a last one as well is the market. So like we mentioned, at that time, one third, around 30% of our revenue was coming from the US. Right now it's 35. If there's one party saying, hey, no, you should shift to everything just US, mm-hmm. that's adding some risk to that as well. And so I think the combination of facts meant that we chose for European party. One, size of the capital. We didn't want to increase it to boundaries that we were uncomfortable with. Two, we didn't want to abandon the European market. For us, it's really about the global market. Three, I think trust and also trust in experience of European companies going to the US, because don't underestimate that, not just in terms of money, but also in terms of cultural differences. There's quite some things to it. And I think the European market is probably a harder market than the US market. But if you're able to crack it, and if you already have a play in US market, it means that later on you're probably more geared to increasing and accelerating even faster. And so sometimes it's about being, let's say, patient enough to then accelerate. And for us, how we looked at this next step, going to 10 to 15 million in recurring revenue, because we always want to be at least the accumulated amount of money that we raised in recurring revenue before doing our next round. Meant that we that with a lot of trust, we chose for high enough and the existing parties for the new A round.
That's a really interesting thinking, Carlo, especially if you say, okay, we are analyzing, okay, what we're able to deliver in terms of playbooks, yeah? Then we see, okay, how much money can we use and attribute to make this engines work, and what is maybe too much? And based from this, like confidence on the revenue engine, going out and raising the money. I think sounds easy now, but I can assume that you and maybe also Wolfgang as an existing investor had the case that, okay, US investors want to chip in, like, let's say, way more money, 20 more million, of course, probably, or I'm assuming also for a way higher valuation. Yeah. So mentally, I guess you have been in the trade of like, hey, okay, the valuation would be way higher. Yep. How did you think about this? And maybe Wolfgang, you can start first. Like, okay, more valuation, like, bigger message, you know, maybe another signal. How did you manage this trade-off?
Well, you know, obviously it's great, you know, just the press release, you know, having a great name and then having probably also like from a fund perspective, you have a great, you know, uptick in your book value.
Yeah.
So that also is going to help. So I think there are a lot of upsides. And by the way, if it works out, it's just great. It's basically, you know, building a company, you know, on steroids. It's a fast track. However, I think what you really have to look at, and that's why we also, when we work with companies, we also, you know, our existing portfolio. And by the way, we did some great growth rounds with a lot of great US investors in our growth portfolio. Growth, what I mean, like 20, 30 or 40 million in revenue, where we think that's the ideal phase, you know, where you should, you know, venture for these kind of guys. I think, and that also comes a little bit down to what Carol says, being a first-time team. I think what's very, very, very important, if you want to work with these guys, you have to have rock-solid KPIs.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to have a proven track record in knowing, you know, how much additional revenue I can spend. I'm going to generate when I invest one more euro in the company. And frankly, even stellar teams in a Series A, how likely is it that they could consistently deliver over 2 or 3 years, you know, with rock solid KPIs? Mm-hmm. So I think a Series A is still a place where you should have kind of some slack, you know, doing a little bit trial and error, you know, probably not delivering 1 a year, you know, like a 100% growth rate, maybe even a 30 to 50% growth rate. But if you have done all the right things in the organization to then accelerate the growth, that's a great thing. So that's kind of something I really would recommend. Unless you don't have these rock solid KPIs, think twice before you do that, especially when you have such a high amount of money you're probably going, you will have to spend. And I absolutely also agree with Carol, you know, it's not about, you know, a business plan and saying, yeah, I have a great working KPI and I just need to hire 10 more sales rep and then I'm going to deliver exactly these same KPIs, you know, with 10 more sales rep. And, you know, probably you're not going to hire these 10 more sales rep because it's a huge change in your organization. So there are simply limits to growth in an organization. And, you know, and there comes a certain moment where you just spend money and it doesn't give you any returns. And then the last thing, and but maybe that's another round, you know, of questions. What happens when you don't deliver, you know, other than maybe, you know, the people, you know, in these funds, you know, lose interest to the extent that you aren't their top priority as well. There are a lot of other things which may happen to the company. You know, probably, you know, you want to do a follow-up round. Are you going to raise a follow-up round when you've made a 50 or 60 post already in a Series A, you know, when you only have delivered like 50 to 60% growth and you're probably at, I don't know, 7 million in revenue instead of the planned 20. You know, so you easily end up with a broken cap table and with a lot of liquidation preference in front of you. So I think that's things you should seriously consider.
And which probably Carol seriously considered in his mind. Otherwise, he would have made the other decision. But I would like to ask the same question to you, Carol, because I know as a first-time founder building a very solid company, the mentioned press release, company from Belgium raises 20 million from the US investor at a, I don't know, 100 million valuation post, is something which, of course, is appealing for many people. So how you as a team, how did you deal with this? We said, okay, we are confident about this growth, but yeah, maybe we can also do 50% more if you really stretch, you know, like the thoughts can also go this direction quite easy. Yeah. So how did you find a way to balance this?
I think for us it worked naturally because of the fact that we were working with a lot of SaaS companies where we're actually through analytics helping them in their growth because we would often see when they raised that they would start using us and having an additional module in there. But we saw companies in 2020, 2021 raising huge amount of capital where you're like, okay, how can this go wrong? And then a year and a half later, either they went bankrupt, they spent all that money without any growth, or they were sold at a price that is ridiculous, that is under the value that even at that point in time you would attribute to that company. And so they played their game, but probably too fast, too soon, too early, with too much risk. And because of seeing a number of companies where, yes, they had the spotlight for a week, maybe a month, but then it's where the work starts. And if you're not able to deliver, then what is that week or month of fame worth if you lose your business, if you lose your mission that you want to bring to the world?
Very true. I 100% agree. And I think this was also an intense discussion. Was it in the intense discussion, the team, Carl, or were you really aligned like that you will act this way? Or was there maybe other voices you needed to fight against?
In funding rounds, there's always intense discussions.
yes.
I don't know whether there's funding rounds without any intense discussions. But we would never do a funding round without alignment in the founding team. But yes, intense discussions. And then everybody brings their arguments to the table, and then you align and you pick what you as a founding team is the right choice. And looking back a little bit more than a year later, I think we made the right choice.
I have another theoretical maybe scenario I would like to discuss: having a term sheet of a US investor, higher valuation, 20 million. I think a second option would to discuss with them and say like, hey, we just need 10. Let's talk about 10. And I'm guessing you did this. So is this just not working because of the discussed fund structure Wolfgang mentioned before? Or like, how was the reactions when you proposed this?
You're totally right. What you see is that at least for a Series A round, often they want to do minimum 10. And sometimes that just doesn't work with the cap table then at that point in time. We had good investors in there that wanted to follow, where we had quite some impact from, and we wanted the cap table to work. But we also didn't want to do times two what we were looking for in terms of capital. But indeed, we looked at that, but then the cap table just didn't work out.
Okay. So maybe taking a look going forward and in terms of time, I would, of course, like to get your perspective on a potential next round. And Wolfgang already gave an indication like, hey, at a Series B, I think it's a good moment to get a US investor for further scaling into the board. What's your perspective on this, Wolfgang? Like, why do you think it's a good time? What is the advantage of bringing someone in maybe from the US or UK at a later stage, at the growth stage?
Well, our investment strategy is we really work with our companies very closely to bring them to the 10 million euro mark. And there are a lot of reasons why 10 million is a good number and why a lot of growth funds are, you know, kind of using that as a threshold plus minus to deploy bigger tickets, because there's a clear traction. You really can understand how efficient the company was doing, you know, with the money. And which is even more important, I think, you know, when you have a Series A, you know, you're very much still reliable on a founder's team. But, you know, once you've reached like the 10 million growth mark, you really have created a scalable company, you know, with the second layer, you know, we have all the processes in place. And you really, you know, have kind of not this founder-led company anymore. Obviously, it's always founder-led. But you have kind of this company, which probably also would work when Carol, you know, would take a month of vacation, which sometimes maybe you should do after.
There's a ticket to holidays here, Carol. Ticket to holidays in the show.
Exactly. But then I think, you know, once you get this past this mark, it definitely makes sense, you know, for various reasons. And these are all the good reasons, you know, why people already dream having them in a Series A. You have instant visibility. You have a much broader access, you know, to further funding rounds. What is also very, very important to understand, you know, maybe not in the case of Lusmo, because they did that extremely early, you know, very, you know, like very successfully. But going to the US and internationally, you know, not having a US investor or like a local investor, you're also a little bit in the backseat when it comes to talent. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a great VP sales sitting in the Silicon Valley, why on earth should you work, you know, for this little European startup with unknown European investors? You know, if you have kind of a good brand, you know, a US brand in your cap table later on, you're just having access to such broader talent, and you're not probably going to get the B guys, you're probably going to get the A guys. So there are a lot of reasons why you want to do that, and they certainly do have also a lot of experience. But our recommendation is, you know, just focus on building the business until you solidly reach kind of this 10 million mark, and then take it from there.
I need to, of course, to ask you, Carl, what's your dream Series B structure of the round? Who should be the lead? What kind of an investor should be the lead?
I think it's the most important thing, irrespective of geographies, it's an investor that believes in the story. It's an investor that believes in the mission. It's an investor that wants to support that mission. That's the most important thing. For us, that's bringing data-driven decision-making to all. And the largest amount of groups possible. Data isn't easy. This data-driven decision making isn't easy. So that's something that we're very passionate about. So trust in the mission. If at a point in time you're able to confidently go from a dollar in to a dollar out, you have your middle management in place, and it just scales well, then of course you want to do it as quickly as possible. And so the B round is way higher than the A round, but you're confident in doing that because the structure is in place, the people are in place that already did it. You're past the 50, 70 people in the company, which going from 20 to 50 is already a big stress. But once you have processes, middle management in place, it makes you set up quicker for doing that. And if then the market and the business is also just looking for your solution to put that out, well, as quickly as possible. And then probably, yes, you will look at US funds just because of the sheer amount of capital that you can then deploy to really accelerate it at a huge amount accelerated pace. But at that time, you don't have to test out or try the A round plays anymore. No, you're confident of then just scaling it.
Super interesting perspective. And I think it was a great end of our content part, Jadalyn. Thanks a lot for giving this unique perspective. We haven't had this discussion before here. So I think it had a lot of value for founders who are going to raise a Series A maybe soon and thinking about, okay, who should be on the cap table. So thanks a lot for giving your insights from both perspectives. Nevertheless, here, of course, we do not end with the content part. We end with a restaurant tip from both of you. And maybe, Wolfgang, we start with you. Coming from Munich, is there a place where our artists should definitely go for breakfast, lunch, or dinner if they're in Munich and want to get some good food?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously, since I'm from Munich, I truly would recommend some good Bavarian food. And actually, that's a place you can meet me also for lunch very often. It's called Isartorbräu. Mm-hmm. It's right next to the S-Bahn station Isartor. So when you're coming from the airport, basically, it's the first S-Bahn station, you know, getting to the city. And there's this tiny little place which is always packed by locals. And they really have great authentic food at a great bargain. So if you're looking for a good Augustina and hearty Bavarian food, just go to Isartorbräu.
Also, the Bräu indicates a good beer, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. Augustina, so what can you have more than that?
If you're looking for a great...
I disagree, coming from Belgium, but...
Exactly, yeah. So if you want to meet Wolfgang, this is a good place. We put it to the show notes, as always. Carol, I think for Munich, we had a couple of recommendations before, but for Leuven, we do not have a single one. So if some of our founders and operators will visit Leuven in the future, where should they go?
Which, by the way, Leuven is only a 10-minute train ride from the Brussels airport. So you know, it really is a great place. I really enjoyed very much going there.
Yeah, no. So in Leuven you have the Münstert. It's actually the how to translate it. You could say the Wall Street street, but it's full of restaurants. And maybe because of the podcast here, which I would recommend is Pepe Nero. Why? Well, because actually at that restaurant, the origin story of our company started. And it's great Italian food. The tagliata di manzo is splendid. So that's one where I would recommend. If you don't like Italian food or up to in that
there's
street,
only one. One recommendation, Lauka. I'm very sorry to interrupt you. We need to keep this for the next visit of you in the show. Yeah. Otherwise, thanks a lot for the recommendation. And I think having a lunch or dinner at the Wall Street Street is also a great indication of future big rounds. So from my side, thank you both for taking the time this morning and coming to the show. Thanks for the value, and hope to see you both in October at the Artist Summit. I know Wolfgang is definitely coming. Carol, if you find the time and want to connect a bit more to the DACH ecosystem and our great growth founders and investors here, we would be happy to have you. Other than that, thanks a lot.
Definitely.
Bye, gentlemen. Have a great day, and thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thank you. Bye. Very appreciate it.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to today's episode. On October the 10th of this year, for the third time, we will host the Artist Summit in Berlin, the most curated SaaS event in Europe for the best 500 founders and top-level executives only. We will provide you with everything you need to scale your SaaS business and personal career, the best go-to-market strategies, access to capital, and a priceless network to the best operators. So Learn about the secrets and proven playbooks from the industry's most successful SaaS leaders. We will have unicorn founder Frank Wolf on the ground from Staffbase, Multicoso from Paloa, or the world's leading expert in brand positioning, April Dunford from Canada. We will prepare you for the next fundraising or exit by connecting you to 125 of the world's best SaaS investors in VC, private equity, debt, or RBF. So if you like to connect to them, have personal talks, and prepare your next round or exit, you need to be on the ground. And as said, build your own AAA network by making new trust-based relationship on the Artist Summit, sharing your best practices, but also receiving failure, mistakes, and best practices from others. Talk to the right people who are maybe one or two stages later and already went through your challenges and solved your problems. So I think a priceless opportunity to really expand your network. We would be happy to see you. So if you like to join and get one of the rare 500 tickets, then take a look at www.artist.net. Maybe you know the last 2 years were sold out quite fast and we were overbooked massively. So if you like to join in October, take a look, apply for the ticket, and we would be happy to see you. Thanks for today's listening and see you next week. This was Julius Göllner from the Artist team. Bye-bye.